Well, Dr. Carol Grant joins us this morning. Welcome back, Dr. Grant. We haven't seen you in a while.
No, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, Dr. Grant is the director of the Margaret L. Williams Developmental Evaluation Center. You deal with children with a variety of challenges. Tell us about some of the children that you work with.
All right. The center is designed to help children who have or are demonstrating some disabilities or some delays in development, or we suspect they may develop, so we call it children with developmental disabilities or at risk.
Okay.
So families who are watching their child develop and have some concerns can give us a call. We take children up to age 8. And if we're not at the appropriate agency, we can help families find the correct one who can provide the evaluation services.
I'm sure that's very helpful. If you don't know where to go, it's nice to know that somebody can help you get to the right place. But what kinds of developmental disabilities are these children who are having problems with hearing or sight, or are these all?
Good question. Well, New York State is a very supportive state of children, as you know. And we have in place two programs, the Early Intervention Program and the Preschool Special Ed Program, which are public funds supporting families who are concerned about their child. The type of child we get is usually a more complex child. If a child has something more than just a simple language delay where they suspect that there might be a medical origin for the delays, mm-hmm. or the delays are language and social and motor, and people are just saying that there's more going on here than just a delay that can be easily identified. So we specialize in children with autism, children with sensory processing, central auditory processing, apraxia, and we've been doing this for like 26 years.
And you know, the nice part is that none of these parents need to know any of those names.
Correct.
They can come to you and you'll figure out what names need to be had and then what help these children need. Am I right?
Absolutely.
That's great. Now, you're here this morning because we want to talk about a program you have coming up for families who have children with autism. Tell us about the program.
Well, as many people know, autism is certainly more recognized, and there are more children with autism currently now in our schools and being identified through daycares, through pediatric offices. And at this point in time, unfortunately, we do not have one recognized cause for autism, nor do we have one recognized cure that works for all.
Sure.
The best strategies are behavioral strategies, meaning finding ways to help support the child and their caregivers in figuring out how to manage daily life and to promote skills, growth, and communications and so forth.
Because children who have autism, it's very difficult sometimes to manage them just get through the day, isn't
it? Right, absolutely.
We've talked about that before. Now, I want to make sure that we give the date and the time and then talk more about the program. It's next Friday, February 26th, 8:30 to 4:30 at the Sheraton Syracuse University.
Correct.
And we will give those details again, but I want people to understand that this is a program coming up that they can attend, can't they? This is for families.
Well, families and teachers and educators and therapists, anybody who is working and with or supporting a child with autism, this speaker will offer some strategies, some ways of looking at that child's behaviors, how to promote that child's communication skills and daily life skills, and figure out how to advance the child to become the best they can.
Well, I want to talk about the speaker in a moment, but if I understand correctly, what you're saying is if I have a child who I have challenges getting through the day, my child is somewhere on that spectrum, that autism spectrum, this is going to be a way of developing tools that are specific to my child?
Well, first of all, I mean, all children are different, and that includes children who are on the autism spectrum.
Sure.
But we have found that there are some strategies that are more successful in helping them understand expectations and to get through what is expected of them. Dr. Smith Miles has been excellent researcher and clinician in helping parents and teachers understand what that might be.
Okay.
What we're finding is that the more we can lay out expectations to the child in a way the child understands, like that's why we use a lot of visual strategies and giving forewarnings about events to come up, the child is more likely to be successful. So, parents, educators, anybody supporting a child will get more insight in how a child with autism thinks. I like to think of autism as a learning style difference.
Okay.
They take in information differently. They process it differently, right from a sensory level up to a cognitive attention and just thinking about it. They process it differently, so therefore we need to use different strategies.
Let me just ask you, I'm sorry to stop you, but I want to get a better sense. So let's talk about a child who does not have autism versus a child who does and maybe is somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, all right? I take that child to the supermarket. What's the difference?
Well, what I was going to say, which ties right into this, is that there is no strategies that we use with children on the spectrum that we wouldn't use for a typical child.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, perhaps when you take your typical child to the grocery store, you can say, come on, we're going to go to the grocery store, and it just flows. Mm-hmm. Child on the spectrum who processes language much slower and has a harder time and has a hard time with transition, the parent might want to show the child a visual picture. We're going to the grocery store, and then maybe show them coupons. These are the things we're going to buy. So the child knows what's expected of them and that these are the things we're going to buy. So the child can become engaged in the process, whereas maybe a mom could just say to their typical child, we're going to go buy oranges and apples and new cereal and da-da-da.
And the child could process it.
And the child could process it. The child's spectrum may not be able to take all that in. But if you can show them, this is what we're going to do, get them to pick out what cereal that you find acceptable that they can choose from, mm-hmm. might engage them more in the process.
This is really about managing their expectations, isn't it?
Managing their understanding of the expectations.
Very interesting. Now, you invite families, and as you said, the teachers and so forth. Should they be bringing their child who has autism with them?
Oh, no. This is definitely an adult conference.
It is.
Yes.
Okay. And is there a cost involved?
Yes. Parents can come for $55, and professionals are $85. Students, we also give a reduced rate if they sign up under their professor. It includes lunch.
That's
going to be a lovely, you know, day.
And they can network with other families
Absolutely.
Who have children with autism as well.
Right.
Let's remind people it's this Friday, February 26th, 8:30 to 4:30 at the Sheraton Syracuse University. And how do people sign up?
They can call the number, which is
464-8668. That's the Upstate Connect number that we give. And we'll also make sure that we link people from the HealthLink On Air website. Well, Dr. Carol Grant, thank you so much for coming by this morning. This sounds like a wonderful program.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Bad news. Antidepressants don't work, except, and good news, our brains do. Well, dear listeners, a major new study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, in fact, probably the biggest study in psychology in my professional life, found that for mild or moderate depression, antidepressant drugs are no better than placebo, sugar pills. The researchers reviewed the relevant studies and concluded any benefit of antidepressants over sugar pills, except for very severely depressed folks, was, quote, non-existent to negligible. Wow. How can this be? These drugs are taken by about 30 million of us in the U.S., and about 75% say they feel better. Well, it turns out so do almost exactly the same percentage of study participants who took sugar pills. In fact, the only people for whom there was any substantial benefit of antidepressants was for very severely depressed folks, the most depressed one in every 8 depressed people. How does all this make sense? Well, the studies the drug companies based their ads on were done on very severely depressed people, and the placebo effect is so powerful. If we take something we believe will help us, it will. But, you know, I see this placebo effect as good news. It shows just how powerful our minds are. That while most of us can't buy hope and happiness in a bottle, we can change what we think and do for a more satisfying life. And there's lots we can do, from making good relationships to regularly moving the bottle a little bit more than usual, to quitting drinking too much or sleeping too little, to paying attention to what we're grateful for, to helping others less fortunate, to simply doing more fun stuff, maybe with the money we save on the drugs. And if those things don't lift our spirits, talking with a counselor, someone trained to help us discover what's getting in the way of our naturally hopeful, helpful mind, likely will. quit cold turkey if you're on antidepressants. No, you might be that 1 in 8 where they seem to really work, and you could get withdrawal effects. Instead, talk with your doc about possibly tapering off. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill saying, let's make some more fun together. Thanks for tuning in.